Last Monday night, we took the first, second, and fourth chapters of Lamentations. Now, we did that because those three chapters seemed to me to fit together. Then the third chapter, which we want to study tonight, is a little different in its arrangement, as well as a little different in its approach to material. Then the fifth chapter, a concluding chapter here, indicates here the miseries of the captives and also a prayer for mercy. Now, if you've been reading this book of Lamentations, if you read it again during the week, I think you'll find it, as I have, rather monotonous. What I mean by that is, the prophet here is dealing in such a similar way with the same ideas all the way through. That is, the lamentation over the fall of Jerusalem. But that brings us to this point. What is the real lesson that we get from the study? What advantage do we have of spending a couple of nights on this particular book? I think one is that it points out the terribleness of sin and then the consequence. Yeah, the consequence of sin and the consequence of it. And then along with that, the grief and the suffering that follows. The grief and the suffering that always follows sin. I don't disagree with the lesson, at least that I get out of it. Get that lesson. So, the consequence here was sin, determines us to bring that consequence. And then the suffering. I think that will help us maybe to appreciate Jesus' statement when individuals are cast into outer darkness. That shall be the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. Here you see the consequence of individual sinning against God. Now, that I think will be the primary thing that I get out of it and will be able to pass on to you. Because actually, as you go through and read it, and you read it several times, and each time you're impressed more and more with the consequences and the lamentation over sin. Now, we come to the third chapter tonight. I also pointed out this fact, chapters 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 are what we call acrostic poems or alphabetic poems. That is, here the first line or the first stanza will begin with an A and then the next one down here is B and you come on down. Now, in your notice, you have 22 verses in the first and the second and the fourth chapter. There are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. So that in one place, and I don't remember where because it would not have impressed me that important, but in one particular place here, the transpose two letters. Take one letter comes here and this one here over here. And I couldn't tell you why. Right? But each of these verses begins with the next letter. Now in chapter 3 is different. In the first three verses will begin with the same letter. So you have 66 verses there. Now in the fifth chapter, we have 22 verses, but the writer does not follow that pattern of the acrostic. They're not alphabetically arranged. I presume he wanted to say something there in a simpler way. I don't know. But at any rate, we have that difference. So tonight we want to cover the third and the fifth chapter. Now in this third chapter here, we're dealing here with the affliction of the people and the host that grows out of that. That's one of the encouraging things in this particular chapter, is the hope that encourages the people. And also he deals with the goodness of God in that. Now you will notice in the first 21, at least I think the first 21 verses, he is using the singular, I. Then beginning with verse 22, it's weak. Come on down to 40. Again, it's true. It's us and we on through that part. Now, that raises the question, who is speaking and what? I think personally that in this first 20 verses here, where the writer is using the singular personal I, that he himself represents individual, maybe the right to have had to suffer along with the wicked. And so he is speaking not simply as Jeremiah, but he is speaking as the individual, each individual who has had to suffer the consequence of the sins of the nation. Then when it comes to the weak, probably there, he's talking about the whole now, putting it, his thoughts, taking the thoughts of Judah itself, the people themselves, and speaking for them. Now this is the way I think that the poem goes. All right, let us notice it. I am the man that hath seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He does not name Jehovah, but he's talking about it. Now God over and over in the book of Jeremiah told of the wrath to come unless they repented and turned back to God. That's the deal. What right? In fact, night, as I said last time, in Deuteronomy 28 and in Leviticus 26, where you have the blessings and the curses given us there, God told them what he would do if the people forsook Jehovah and went after the idols. God couldn't do anything else and be just and be holy. Be true to his truth. Right? So I am the man that has seen affliction by the rod of his wrath. He hath led me and caused me to walk in darkness and not in light. As I say, I think Jeremiah here is a representative of the people and all of the individuals, talking about the godly person. He hath led me and caused me to walk in darkness and not in light. Surely against me he turneth his hand again and again all the day. And you remember in Job said, my afflictions come as truth one upon another. A great similarity between the book of Job and this book of Lamentations. Both of them are dealing with individuals who have seen affliction. Only here it's a nation. I think he represents the people of the nation, all of the individuals, not just Jeremiah himself, but he's speaking for all of them. All right, he turned his hand again and again all the day. Now look at verse 4, my flesh and my skin have been made old. That is, your years are developed in days. The ages, years time, in a day's time, quickly. My flesh and my skin have been made old. He hath broken my bones. Not literally, but he's been made old in a hurry here. He hath builded against me and compassed me with gall and travail. Now gall was a poison. Travail was angry. So here, compassed about me, builded against me, and compassed me round about with poison and with anger that he's gone through. He hath made me to dwell in dark places, as those that have been long dead. Here's the dead that have gone back to the dust, the dark recesses of a cave or a grave, whichever it may be. So he made me to dwell in dark places. That is hopeless. These righteous people, if there were very many of them, how many I don't know. But for the close of the period of before the captivity, these individuals here, it was a dark day for them. They couldn't see any hope. They didn't see anything better. Jeremiah told them that Nebuchadnezzar was coming, that was going into captivity. What few righteous people there were, they realized that they knew that. Bound to be a thief, for God has always had his remnant. Now there's a time when he did. So even then there was a remnant, and these are the ones that suffer. Oftentimes, the person does right, suffers does it. He don't suffer the physical affliction with the rest of them, and he suffers the mental anguish and torment in the knowledge that the people are doing wrong. And here's what's coming. Here's what's coming upon me. Right? So I've suffered, I've been in dark places, and they have been out a long day. He has walled me back, and I cannot go forth. He has made my chain heavy, walled him about as it were with a wall, and he's not really going back as once he was. He's chained me to whatever is going to happen. Yea, when I cry and call for help, he shutteth out my prayer. Now you remember we had that, and it comes to it again down in verse 44. And again it happened. But you remember back in the 7th, the 11th, and 14th chapters of Jeremiah, three different times God said, don't pray for this people. I'm not going to hear your prayer. Don't pray for them. I stress that. I believe in 15:1 also. But three or four times God said, don't pray for them. I think I'm going to turn back and look at that if I may. Verses 7. It's 11, I believe it is, or 7, 14, one of the other ones. 7, yes. Back in the 7th chapter, and verse 16 it is. Therefore, pray not thou for this people, neither lift up cry nor pray for them, neither make intercession to me, for I will not hear thee. And that was to Jeremiah. I think Jeremiah is speaking for the people. When they pray, it was as though God did not hear the prayer. Now, over in the 11th chapter, we have it all through there. When he, in that chapter, won't pray for him. I think that's also about 14, 13 and 14, 14 years. Therefore, pray not now for this people, neither let them cry, nor prayer for them. For I will not hear them in the time that they cry unto me because of their trouble. Now, you need to pray, Jeremiah. And the time comes that they want to pray, I won't hear them either. But now the righteous feel as though their prayers have not been heard because they were not answered. Because God went ahead and punished them, as he said, that he was going to. Then over in the 14th chapter, in verse 11, and Jehovah said of me, pray not for this people for their good. When they fast, I will not hear that cry. When they offer burnt offering and meal offering, I will not accept them, but I will consume them by the sword and by the famine and by the pestilence. I have been in verse 15, chapter 1. Then said Jehovah unto me, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, the representatives of the law and the prophets, stood before me, yet my mind would not be toward this people. Cast them out of my sight and let them go forth. Well, there's this about it, class. Oftentimes the righteous have to suffer with the wicked. It may not always seem just to it, but nevertheless, it's upon the price that I paid for the right to live in a moral world where men have the right of choice. So men make choice, there are consequences that come. Now I have to pay upon the price for the right to live in a world where men can choose, but govern by moral law. And I think that's one of the lessons that I learned from Job. I think that's one of the lessons I learned from the prophets and from this particular book here, this particular poem. All right? So he said, don't pray. Now, furthermore, he has walled up my ways with hewn stone, that is, heavy stone. He hath made my paths crooked, as in a maze. Allow that the old Tucson here, I had some company here a while back, last month, and they made something new out there, a maze there. I went through, and you go up here, and you come to an end, you come back and go out on here and here. But if you keep wandering around, after a while, you get out. But I think that's what the prophet's saying here. He walled me up as in a maze. I go here and yonder and back, and I can get out. Walled in. Made my path crooked. He is unto me as a bear lying in wait as a lion in secret place. Now we had that in Hosea and Amos. Both of them used the figure of the bear and the lion in wait. Now he says, he is unto me as a bear, as a lion. Who is? Jehovah is. Now this is one thing that you see in the study of Jeremiah and the Lamentation, is that God said, here's what I'm going to do. Let Jeremiah, or whoever he's speaking for here, recognizes that God has brought the judgment. Now, you and I need to learn that. If a judgment comes upon this nation, I'll suffer with the wicked. Not only that, I will be able to say that it's a divine judgment, but it is a righteous judgment. All of God's judgment, a righteous judgment. Right? We have turned aside my way and fooled me, torn me in pieces. He had made me a vessel. Now I think the prophet there is speaking, not for himself, but for the people. For maybe the righteous remnant that were torn in pieces. There was something so much over there. There were so many of them that didn't care. They were not impressed with what took place. You remember that when they went into captivity, even those over in Ezekiel, they wouldn't listen to them. And over here in Jeremiah, they ignored and they despised. Even after the captivity, there was Ishmael that came over and killed Gedaliah. Then there were those Jews that said, we'll listen to God, whatever he says. When he didn't say what they wanted, they took Jeremiah and took him down to the east. So, these things didn't stop. Didn't change. This is the things you learn the Revelation right, over and over. And that is, that when God sent his judgment upon the wicked, for their idolatry and their murders and their sorceries, they repented not of. You read the book lately, you remember that. Right? He had turned aside my ways and pulled me in pieces, made me desolate. He had bent his bow and set me as a mark for the arrow. And when he bends the bow, he shoots at me. I'm the one he shoots at. He has caused the shafts of his quiver to enter into my range. That is into the sickness there, to the secret parts of the individual. I am become a derision to all my people and a song all the day. Now, if this is Jeremiah speaking personally of himself, that's true. I think it more includes things broader than that. I don't think it's Jeremiah's own complaint. So, in his younger days, he did complain. In the latter part of the book, he did not complain. As he grew older, he didn't complain as once he had. I think he's speaking here for the people who suffered with him, and as he suffered. And they're the song of the wicked. They're the song of those that didn't get healed. Alright? He hath filled me with bitterness, he hath sated me with worm, which the Satan is to saturate. Worm, that was a bitter of wood that was mixed with water and made a very bitter drink of soap. He hath also broken my teeth with lava stones. He had covered me with ashes. Maybe he would give him a stone for bread. Maybe mixing stone in with the bread, I don't know. But anyhow, what it suggests is the curse of the people here. And I have removed my soul far off from people. I forgot prosperity. No prosperity. I'm a long ways from peace. And I said, my strength is perished, and mine expectation from Jehovah. And he changes that a little bit. Here, his expectation from Jehovah is perfect. God's not going to do anything. But later on, he changes that. God is going to do something. That's the only hope you have. Well, now that's what Job did once. Job, when he reached the extremity of his own ability, he then turned to God. Cast it all on Jehovah. Right? Now, remember, now turns to God in prayer. Right? Now, here he says, my strength is perished, my expectation from Jehovah. Wait a minute, I think I misread that. I said, my strength is perished, and mine expectation from Jehovah. Now that sounds as though the expectation from Jehovah perished with his strength. But he couldn't hold it back. Just like Job, when he says that it's all one with God, whether a man does good or he does bad. But he couldn't hold it back. In other words, no moral government in the universe. He knew that wasn't so. He switched from that and then turned back to God. Cast himself on Job. The point I made when I went over Job last year, year 481, was that sometimes a person has to hit the bottom before he's ready to start climbing. And I think that was true of Job. I think that was true here of these people. That they have to experience the bitterness before they're ready to start up. Now they're ready to look to God. Remember mine affliction and my misery. The wormwood and the gall. My four things, affliction and misery. The wormwood and the gall. That which he had to do. My soul hath been still in the memory, and it bowed down with envy. This I recall to my mind. Therefore have I hope. Now notice, he turns from that to hope. When he says here, when I call to mind, why should I keep complaining? Why complain? What good does that do? Let me turn to God. There's my hope. And as I said, when you hit the bottom, then you begin to look up on the way with candle. And sometimes you have to get there before you start looking up. And I think this is one of the lessons that God's trying to teach people. You don't have to hit the bottom. But when we start down, sometimes before people do look up, they've got to hit the bottom. Then they look up. And that's what he does here. So he says here, when he then this I recall to my mind, therefore have I hope. It is of Jehovah's loving kindness that we, now notice, he shifts from the singular to the plural, that we are not consumed because his compassion fail not. Now notice, there are two things, God's loving kindness, his loving kindness and his compassion. Now the word loving kindness was a favorite word of Hosea. Thus before Israel went into Assyrian captivity, he repeatedly appealed to God's loving kindness. And now then here's his compassion. Please fail not. Why? So why? Why complain anymore? Then I look to God. There's our hope. I think he's trying to say that for the people, whether the wicked or whether just the righteous that are suffering, I don't know. But at any rate, let's turn to him. Now notice they are new every morning. What are new? God's kindnesses and compassion through the rising of every sun. I can see that God gives us the sunshine. God gives us the rain. God gives us the air we breathe. God gives us all the good things that we have. So every morning, with the rising of the sun, I'm impressed again with the loving kindness and compassion of God. If I look for it, I will look for it. That's the thing we need to look for. I remember back when I lived in Abilene, about a third of before sun up, not daylight, go out and get up the calf, milk, cow. I remember one morning, I just decided to see how many things I could see that reminded me of the Lord in the Bible. Well, I was a morning star, and after a while, with the rising sun, there was a dew on the grass. And there, I went on and on. I don't recall how many things. And I was amazed at how many things I could see that reminded me of God if I looked. If I looked. And I think that's what the prophet is saying. There will be a new every morning, his compassion, his goodness. Every morning, great is thy faithfulness. And you see, there's a change. Change from the complaining or the lamenting unto a hope, and that hope is in Jehovah. Now know, Jehovah is my portion, saith my soul, therefore will I hope in him. Well, there's the portion. That's why I'm to hope. So when you hit the bottom, look up. Look up. Not many of us, I guess, have really hit the bottom. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we hit the bottom. look up. Let me turn here while I'm at that. That wonderful 73rd chapter of the Psalm, 73rd Psalm. I'm beginning with verse 25. And you have noticed this statement here that I think kind of helped out what we're studying. Chapter 73, beginning with verse 25. Now, you heard, you got a song like that. Whom have I in heaven but thee? There is none upon earth that I desire besides thee. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For lo, they that are far from thee shall perish. Thou hast destroyed all them that play the harp, departed from thee, that I know. But it is good for me to draw near unto God. I have made the Lord Jehovah my refuge, that I may tell of all thy works. That's a beautiful passage. Like that whole song, is there room and I in heaven besides thee. Notice what he does for it. Yeah. Good for me to draw near unto it. Beautiful passages like that mean so much to us in times like they're going through back here. So Jehovah is my portion, saith my soul. Therefore will I hope in him. I know Jehovah is good unto them that wait for him, to the soul that seeketh him. No, three goods, three times the word here, 26, it is good that a man should hope and quietly wait for the salvation of Jehovah. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. What do I mean by that? It's good that in youth, an individual learn to trust in God. Ecclesiastes 12 and 1, remember also thy Creator in the days of thy youth. When evil days come not near, nor nigh, and I shall say I have no pleasure in them. Before the rain of the sun return after the rain saw me. Right? So the idea is good for an individual not to have it too good all his life. Brother Mann and I talked about our youth. I don't guess anybody could have been any poorer than we were. He argues with me on that. He says, look, he was poorer than I was. I don't believe it. Because he lived and I lived, he had been any poorer than either one of us maybe. But I'm glad. I'm glad I had to come up a hard way. Father died in the 15, six of our children. I had to quit school, go to work, make a living for him. A good for him. Good for him. To bear the yoke in my youth, to learn responsibility, to learn to work, to learn to appreciate the value of a dollar, and how it comes, all that. Many of you can say, well, that was my experience also, I'm sure. How the young folks couldn't, and some of us old ones maybe can't. At any rate, I'm glad. It's good to bear the yoke in my youth. Now look at those three goods. Now Jehovah is good. Now it is good that a man should hope and quietly wait for the salvation of Jehovah. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. That he learn that lesson. That's good. I think there's one thing wrong with our present generation of young people. I had it too easy. Never learned to work. Some of them have. That's the majority have. They grew up, they wanted to hold a tractor before they were learned to walk good. Then they wanted a car, and after a while they only wanted to go 100 and some odd miles an hour. You want a motor boat. And after a while, maybe one of them ran out of it. I don't know. Maybe they didn't quite get that. They moved to the rest of it. Don't know what this to work. I think that's a curse. All right. So notice the change in tone here. All right. Then goes on here. Here's submission. Out comes submission when he realizes that his hope isn't looking up. Now comes submission. Let him sit alone with each side. Because he had laid it upon him. That is because God laid his yoke. And it looks back to the yoke of verse 27. To bear the yoke. God has laid that yoke upon him. For it's good. It's always found. God disciplines for our good. Let him put his mouth in the dust. If so be, there may be hope. Let him bow down. Submit to God. Bow low before Jehovah. That there may be hope. Let him give his cheek to him that smiteth him. Let him be filled full with reproach. That is, submit and leave to taking care of that under Jehovah. God doesn't like that. God hates that kind of a treatment of people, but go ahead and let God handle the situation. Now notice, for the Lord will not cast off forever. For though he cause grief, yet will he have compassion according to the multitude of loving kindness. Now notice, though he cause grief by the judgment, chastening that he sends upon him, may cause grief. But still, our good chastening is, as what does the Hebrews 12 say? All chastening seemeth not for the moment to be joyous, but after it leaves, and bear what? Peaceable fruit. Even the fruit of righteousness under an exercise thereby. Chastening the heart at the time. You know why? But it bears good fruit then. If I submit to it and learn the lesson. Right? Now the multitude of his loving kindnesses, for he doth not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men. God doesn't want to do that. He gets no delight out of that. He does it as a matter of principle that grows out of his absolute holiness, his absolute righteousness, his absolute justice that demands judgment. Can't be another way. Wickedness, transgression of the law, must bear its own consequences. That's what he says. He doesn't want to. It doesn't willingly, or that is because he wants to do that particular thing from his heart. To crush underfoot all the prisoners of the earth, to turn aside the right of a man before the face of the Most High, to subvert a man in his cause, the Lord approved it not. Now look at that. To crush underfoot, to turn aside from the right, pull the face from just a brother man in his court, the Lord approveth not. Right? So, if a nation treats people that way, what's going to come to it? Now, the way the Jews have treated God, the cruelty that had developed among themselves, God hated that. He hates every false way. Now that the judgment has to come. Now, God doesn't make those Babylonians what they are, they made themselves. Now, when God has used them, like the Assyrian, he'll turn to their destruction. That will come after a while. If we get that in the prophecy. Right? The Lord doesn't approve that. Who is he that said, and it cometh to pass when the Lord commanded it not? Who is the man that can command the thing and make it come to pass except God? Nobody. Us command something, only God can make it come to pass at the point. Out of the mouth of the Most High cometh there not evil and good. That is, the evil and the good are from his decree. Now what is the evil that he's talking about? What? Over in Amos, the third chapter, Amos says there, there's evil before a city, and Jehovah hath not done it. What? Over in verse 3, I think it is. No, that shall do walk dropping down to verse 6. Shall the trumpet be blown in a city, and the people not be afraid? Shall evil befall a city, and Jehovah hath not done it? Surely the Lord Jehovah will do nothing except he reveal the secret unto his servants the prophets. The line of the Lord who will not fear. The Lord Jehovah spoke it, who can but prophesy. Now, does God do anything before he reveals by his prophets? No. No, what God had done to them, to Israel and Judah both, had he not revealed it through the prophets. Did not Amos and Hosea say what was going to befall Israel? Yes. Did not Jeremiah tell the people what would befall them? Yes. That's what God told them. Now you say, well, he doesn't speak to us today by prophets. Yes, he does. These same prophets have prophesied against evil and wickedness back then. From Jehovah. Principles do not change. So what God said to those nations back there, that if you continue like this, here's what I'll do. God is going to do the same thing today. God will pay that. God doesn't change. And so he's not speaking through prophets today, living prophets now. He's speaking through the prophets of the old covenant, their living word. And that's one of the things I teach and I learn from the prophets. I learned the principles by which God acts toward nations in wickedness. Now, I suppose after all, you know that one better than I talk to anyway. But I said it enough times. And you've got one. Well, that's what Amos is saying. And the evil before the city that Jehovah had done. Now, what is that evil? It's the evil of judgment. Not the evil judgment that befalls the city or nation. This is what he's talking about. That's what he's talking about here. When he says here, out of the mouth of the Most High cometh there not evil and good. That is, though it's a decree that comes from himself that brings evil judgment upon a nation. Or to bring good upon it. So whichever it is in God. God rules in his kingdom of men. And wherefore does the thing that a living man complain? A man for the punishment of his sin. Now notice, why complaining? Because the evil that befalls is what? The consequence is the punishment for sin. Now, what should a man complain about? He ought to complain about his sin. Why complain about punishment? Let's go back and complain about the sins we've done and repent of. Now this is what you learn later on when individuals came unto Zechariah and asked him about keeping a fast. Now God said, I don't want you to fast. Why do you fast? It's because you sinned. And I sent a judgment upon you. Now then you're fasting because of that judgment of the destruction of Jerusalem, and that's not what I want. I don't want to fast. I want you to do what's right. Now, if you do what's right, then the judgment won't come that brings about the necessity of fasting. And that's what he was teaching in Isaiah 58, and now over in Zechariah, I believe it's 7 and 8, those two chapters. Alright? So, let's don't complain about punishment, but complain about the sin. God. That's what he's trying to say. That's a good lesson to learn. Right? Now he continues here, the earth here, returns here. Now, return to the Lord. This is the idea now. Let's return it. Let us, now that's an imperative. Let us search and try our ways and turn again to Jehovah. That follows the last here. I complain about punishment. Let's complain about our sin. Right now, the idea here. Let us return to the Lord. This is what he said. Let us return to, let us search and try our ways and turn again to Jehovah. Let us, I notice you see here's the exhortation here. And that what let's do here. Let us lift up our heart with our hands unto God in the heaven. Now notice that. Let us lift up our heart with our hands. Not enough just to lift up the hand. This is the way the Hebrew general prayed, lifted up his hands to God. Not enough to lift up your hand. What does God want you to lift up? Your heart, that's right. Let's lift up the heart with the hand. With the hands in prayer. Well, let us pray. We are transgressed. Now come to the confession. We are transgressed and have rebelled. Now that's not part. I think God had one had me because they hadn't repented. Over and over said you repent. You remember just before the end of the thing when they turned the slaves loose and just as soon as old Pharaoh turned back down toward Egypt, I'd put them right back in slavery again. That wasn't repent. And that's why God couldn't pardon when he said he couldn't pardon. He couldn't pardon. He could not pardon. Because they did not repent. Alright? Thou hast not pardoned. Thou hast covered with anger and pursued us. That is, covered himself with anger, clothed himself with anger. Thou hast slain. Thou hast not pitied. Well, God said that. So when I do turn my judgment loose, I'll not pity. Thou be no mercy with me. That's the way it's going to be in the final judgment. The day of mercy, pity is now. Their judgment is out of darkness where the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. I think that's what this is teaching. That the consequence of sin brings the grief and the gnashing of teeth and the weeping here that you see among these people. Alright? Thou hast not given. Thou hast covered thyself with a cloud. So the mote cloud and pass through. Well, we read those passages back in Jeremiah 11 and 14, 15:1. No need to pray. I'm not going to hear you. Can't get through. There's no, he covered himself with a cloth, but I can't get through. I better repent and lift up the heart with a hand. God would have heard. God would have heard. Thou hast made us an ox scouring and refuge in the midst of the people. Now that would be the heathen. Well, that's what God said in Deuteronomy 28 that he's going to do. And you'll be the refuge and the ox scouring of the earth. That time's come now. But God told him. The same thing in hell. He told us what it's like. He told us what the judgment is like. He told us what hell's going to be like. Now, if a fellow doesn't have, that's what he wants. All right. He makes the decision, not God. He makes the choice. All our enemies have opened their mouth wide against that is scorned, despised. Fear and the pit are come upon us. That is the destruction here. All of that's come upon us. Devastation and destruction. Alright, so this is what's come upon them now. And it's come, and God said it would. My eye runneth down with tears. I scream. I turn back to the singular. My eye runneth down with streams of water for the destruction of the north of my people. Father, my people simply means the people themselves. My eye pulleth down with and ceaseth not without any intermission till Jehovah looked down and withhold from heaven. Tears are rolled down. I think he's speaking not only for himself, but for that righteous remnant, for those people that are left. My eye affected my soul because of all the mourning for my city. Now, probably there, he's talking about how the women of the city were treated. Mentioned it again later in the fifth chapter, to come to it. How that the women and the virgins were treated, along with others. A very dark picture. They have chased me so long like a bird. They that are my enemies without cold. Well, I think that's why I think it's the righteous remnant is really speaking for. Now, they suffered with the others. So when a judgment hits this country, you and I will suffer along with the wicked who suffer. But we have a hope. We have an anchor in heaven. The whole earth. So they come what may, whether it's death or suffering or what, I can look beyond it. So I've got something better. Nothing better. So I've got something he doesn't have. They have cut off my life in the dungeon and cast a stone upon me. That is upon the throne of a rock. And I don't know I don't think that this is Jeremiah himself, but speaking for how they have treated. Now they treated the individuals who listened to me, who did right. The waters rolled over my head. I said, I'm cut off. Well, that showed me that it was not literal. The waters rolled over in the ground. What do you mean, Jerry? The waters of oppression, the waters of opposition, the waters of destruction, they rolled over. All right. Now, probably this is Judah or Zion, faithful remnant. I call to my name, O Jehovah, out of the Lord's dungeon. None of it Jonah. Never the whale. Father under the whale. He too, I like that expression. Jonah, the second chapter. I think it's about verse 2. When he went down into the depths, and he said, salvation is of Jehovah. Again, sometimes the first one to get involved. Before you ready to recognize Jehovah, Jonah, the second chapter here, when it says, and he said, I called by reason of my affliction unto Jehovah. And he answered, out of the belly of Sheol, he cried, and I heard it in my voice. When the wicked swallowed him, he was in the blackness of that feel better. Then air cut it down into the deep, give the water pressure then on the outside of the wheel line, the mercury pressure then on him. He couldn't move, he couldn't breathe, and yet he couldn't die. They that were doing lying down, forsake their own pressure. I will sacrifice unto thee with a voice of thanksgiving. I will pay you that which I have by salvation, if I'm Jehovah. When you realize that, when the belly of the whale wasn't any hope in the other avenue. When the Jews down here, when they looked up, they were in the belly of the whale, figuratively speaking. When they were carried away into the city, was being destroyed, the one destroyed, carried away into Babylonian captivity, they were one way of looking at us. That's right. We at the bottom. Remember, we always look up. All we look up. I don't know he's going to get finished there. I quickly. All right. In the lowest dungeon, thou heardest my voice. Hide not thine ear at my breathing, at my cry. Thou drewest near in the day that I called upon thee. Thou saidest, fear not. And that's God told me that most of the people didn't pay attention to that fear not. But the remnant did. The righteous remnant did. O Lord, thou hast pleaded the causes of my soul. Thou hast redeemed my life. O Jehovah, thou hast seen my wrong. Judge thou my cause. I want God to judge me. I want God to judge my soul. I don't want man to judge me. I want God to judge me. I'd rather take my chance any day with the Lord than with men, haven't you? Thou hast seen all their vengeance and all their devices against me. Thou hast heard their reproach, O Jehovah, and all their devices against me, the lips of those that rose up against me, and their device against me all the day. And just say, I think he's speaking. For the individual, the righteous individual that have been despised by the great mass of the Jews. Behold, now they're sitting down and they're rising up. I am their song. I'm the one they ridicule. Sing about. Thou wilt render unto them a recompense, O Jehovah, according to the work of their hands. Thou wilt give them hardness of heart, thy curse unto them. Thou wilt pursue them in anger and destroy them from under the heavens of Jehovah. Now, whether that be the Jewish enemies that he persecuted the righteous, or whether it be the Babylonians, or whether it be whoever it is, whoever persecutes the righteous people of God are going to pay for it. They're going to pay for it. And I don't feel like the lady over there tell you about her over there. Yuma, what is here? What one of you told me. Maybe one of you told me about it. So I wouldn't say a word against the Jews. They're God's chosen people. You're looking at them. Well, the Jews are not any more than God than anybody else as far as their favor with God's concern. All equal. Down before my equality. That's enough for me to do. All right, so this one now, I think this is really one of the finest of the chapters or of the whole. So it starts out here with the depressed feeling that he had, past that, complaining, murmuring. Then he said, why should I sit here complaining? I look up. So he looks up, and then he began to call upon God, recognize his sins, the sins. Call upon God, put their trust in him, and then let God handle the wicked people. Let him take care of them. Very fine chapter. Let's stop and get a drink of water. Come back and finish up with the other one. I wonder if you have a question. Maybe you have a question you want to ask first. You might have a question. Next minute, two or four times, get a drink. All right, let's get a drink.